This is React Podcast. I'm Chantastic. This is episode 81 of React Podcast. Today, we chat with Evan Bacon about Expo and delivering on the elusive promise of write once, run anywhere. For the month of February, we're chatting exclusively with Reactathon speakers. You can hear more from Evan on the topic of using Expo for universal React development this March. Reactathon is a top React conference in the heart of San Francisco. Evan and I will be there having a good time and happy to chat with you. Get a ticket at reactathon.com. Evan Bacon, welcome to React Podcast.
What's up, Michael?
Hey, so as far as I know, you're the first master Lego builder to ever be on React Podcast. Tell me how you got that title over you and, like, you know, what you've been doing with Lego.
So I started doing Lego art, I guess, when I was 11, 12 years old. I just wanted to, like, have a life-size Lego Batman sculpture in my house. I'm not sure why. So then I did it, and it took a few months, and people were just really interested in it. I guess I like doing very meticulous, detail-oriented things.
Yeah.
And then, I just kind of kept with that. Like, I wanted to have a life-size Iron Man and Superman. After a while, like, I got invited to go to conferences and stuff and show off Legos. And after a while, I guess it was just like doing it professionally, and I kind of grew into it. And now I'm a Lego master builder and a programmer as well.
That's amazing. So you still do the Lego building?
Yeah, whenever I have time. I love doing Lego art.
Oh, man, that is amazing. So this is kind of like a random question, but like, so you're building a life-size thing, right? And
right.
Like, how much does, you know, like a 30,000 piece like sculpture, like, what does that cost you as a hobby to build something like that?
A ton of money, like so much money. When I was younger, I had like a warehouse job, and I would do like sanitation. So I carried trash down to the, just so I could like take all of that money and invest it right back into Legos. And I could only build like so much at a time, because then I like would run out. Legos are really expensive, and they've gotten even more expensive over the years. So it's pricey.
Man, that's wild. Does Lego like sponsor people who are doing some of these like lifestyle size things?
Yeah, I think they sponsor a few people. At the time when I was mostly doing it, I was too young for a sponsorship. So they told me I needed to be like 18 or older.
Okay.
And at the time I was like, yeah, I don't know if I'll be doing Lego stuff when I'm like an adult. But now I just pay for it with my software money, my open source money.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I loved, as I was researching you, it was fun to find your YouTube channel and see kind of this cross section of your interests, both, you know, programming and doing the Lego stuff. So the master builder, like, or master Lego builder, like, what does it take to actually get that, and what is it?
So a Lego master builder, I think officially Lego has master builders who work at Lego and they make sculptures all day. And then there are the things called like Lego certified professionals, which are the people who don't necessarily work at Lego, but they do have contracts with Lego. I am neither of those two things. I just got really popular on the internet and people just started calling me a Lego master builder.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah, yeah. So it's totally made up. It completely has no validity behind it. There's no certificate, or it's kind of like my open source professionalism. It's just kind of like a, yeah.
It's a thing that you just kind of grow into.
Yeah, I guess people are using my library now. I guess people, so now I'm an open source developer, and same with Legos. I guess now I'm a Lego master builder.
Well, I love it. It was really fun to see some of those videos. I've never actually seen a life-size Lego sculpture constructed. And so it was really fascinating to watch. Now, getting into the more technical stuff, you work with Expo and you're a full-time open source developer. Tell me a little bit about how you got into that and connected with Expo.
Right. So coming out of Lego art, I took a job as a designer at a company called Frog Design, which is a very big design corporation, kind of like IDEO. And I was working on lots of prototyping. And I was a native developer at the time, so I was making like iOS and Android apps. And then Eventually, I was working with stuff like Ionic and Xamarin, and I found React Native, and at the time, I wasn't very good. And then maybe like a few months later, my next project, I reapproached it, and I found Expo, and it was incredible. Like it made my job go like four times faster, and I barely had to do anything, and it was great. And I think after like a few projects of using Expo, it started to set in that I had to like move on to other projects. And so I just kind of quit my job and started working full time on developing Expo. And I've loved it. It's great.
Awesome. So were you able to work on Expo like first as like an external or like open source developer and then move into kind of a professional capacity with them?
Yeah, so the capacity I joined Expo in was like I was making demos on the side along with my job just because I really enjoyed using Expo so much. And so I made like a lot of video games. Like I made this Crossy Road clone and like a Minecraft clone with Expo. And so when I joined Expo, it was to do like product design and make demos and guides. And then it just by happenstance turned out that I also am a native developer and know JavaScript. So that worked out really well because now I hardly make guides or tutorials and I mostly just work on native code.
That's awesome. About how big is the team working on Expo right now?
I don't know. Maybe 15 people. And then we contract with Software Mansion, which is an incredible React Native consultant firm out of Krakow, Poland. The guy who runs Software Mansion, Christoph Majera, made React Android. So like React Native used to work only on iOS. And then he added Android support at Facebook. And so now they make like tons of great stuff. And a lot of like there are a bunch of people at Software Mansion who just work full time on Expo. So we've got a few people over there, and then we've got a bunch of people in Palo Alto, and there's a lot of remote workers. So like Brent Batney, who lives in Vancouver, and Villa, who lives in Finland, and lots of people.
Awesome, awesome. So I want to back up a little bit for anyone who's not familiar with Expo, because I think the audience for the show is predominantly web developers. And if you could, give us like a high-level definition of like what Expo is and what it does.
Right. So Expo is a universal platform for building applications with React and TypeScript or JavaScript. And it has a managed workflow and a bare workflow for the native apps. And then for the web apps, it uses React Native Web, which is something that I personally work on. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But for the longest time, it was just the iOS and Android, just iOS and Android. But it streamlined building iOS and Android. So there was a client app, which you can download from the App Store, and then you can load all of your React Native projects on that, which is great because if you don't have a MacBook, then you can still do iOS development. Otherwise, you can't build onto your iOS, like if you have a Windows computer, which is a lot of the world. So we have a lot of people who are not American who can use Expo to finally develop iOS apps. And then there's a bunch of tools like a build service in the cloud. So you can do like Expo build iOS and that'll build your IPA. Like you don't have to do anything else. It's crazy. And like Expo build Android, which will build an APK and give it to you. And then you can just send it off to the store. So it makes native development super easy and it's great. And then they build a lot of just the React Native community out. So like James Ide and Brent Batney, who are kind of some of the founders of Expo, they both were at one point, I think, like number one contributor on React Native. They work on tons of stuff. I mean, Brent Matney, if you do React Native stuff, you'll see his name everywhere. He made like camera. He works on React Navigation.
Yeah.
So Expo just builds out a lot of the React Native community as well and helps to like make the modules that are required. So any module that is like an Expo module, like Expo Camera or React Navigation, these are all like work on any platform that Expo works on. So you can use Expo Camera on iOS, Android, or web. And if we add desktop, then desktop and things of that nature.
Interesting. So it sounds like from someone from like an outside perspective, it sounds like there's a lot of framework tools that allow you to like
a lot of tooling
make the developer process I guess more consistent. So like you said, if you don't have a Mac, you can still develop an iOS app instead of having to kind of, because like React Native doesn't really solve that for you. It's just it gives you the tooling to like make it possible, but you still have to have, you know, like Xcode and all of the tools to actually build those applications.
Right, right. And if you're using Expo at like a more like professional capacity, we do have like this bare workflow where you can drop down and then add native dependencies. Hmm. But then naturally you need to like rebuild those onto your device.
Interesting.
So we also have things like this custom client that we're working on where you can request to have native modules added and built in a client and things like that. And so it does have the ability to like drop down to what React Native provides. But mm-hmm. for the most part, I think of React Native like a way to use JavaScript and React with native code. And then Expo adds all this tooling and like the CLI and all kind of things just that bring the best of web to native development. So it makes it a lot more approachable for web developers.
Interesting, interesting. And so you said there's also a lot of like libraries that are maybe kind of like missing APIs from like just bare React Native.
Right. I like to think of React Native as a library, not a framework, even though it does have a lot of, you know, like components built into it, which they're currently working on pulling out. It doesn't have things like the camera or the file system or the permissions, constants, device, so much stuff. And so all of these things that you just need to build a real production ready application, Expo provides all of these things for you, things like gestures and maps and videos. And you can use them all outside of the Expo ecosystem as well. Like if you just have a regular React Native project, you can install Expo permissions and then use that to ask for permission to the camera or something.
So it sounds to me like, I know that there's a lot of library confusion, you know, on like NPM, like, you know, what the best library is for this and that. And it sounds to me like a differentiator of Expo libraries is that they're designed with cross-platform in mind. So maybe it's not just going to be web, it's not just going to be like iOS or Android, but you're designing them to be used on all of the platforms. Is that
right?
Is that kind of a correct assumption?
Yeah. So a good example of this is we have like a standardized error pattern that we use. So if functionality isn't available on a certain pattern, it will throw that kind of unified unavailability error and tell you maybe this isn't implemented or this just isn't available on certain platform. But yeah, they're designed in a way where like if we make a library, we want to kind of leave it flexible. So if we want to add desktop support in the future, we can do that. And we don't have to change the overarching API, the front-facing API for people. And then, yeah, a big thing with Expo libraries is that like React Native is it's iOS and it's Android, right? And then there's these out of tree solutions like what Microsoft is doing with React Native Windows and what Nicholas Gallagher did with React Native Web, which is incredible. So Expo creates libraries that work across any platform that has React Native. It's really just like a universal React rather than like a React Native setup.
Interesting, interesting. So you're kind of taking what React Native is doing with the two-platform solution and extending it to even more platforms.
Right, making it just work universally.
Interesting. So this is interesting. I've only just recently learned about Microsoft and kind of their investment into React Native. And that it sounds like they're doing both Office and a couple of Xbox projects using React Native. Can you tell me a little bit more about React Native Windows and how that fits into the ecosystem?
Yeah, well, the stuff Microsoft's been doing with React Native is super exciting because it seems like they're very excited about using it. They've put it into a bunch of products. And the stuff that they're doing with Windows, it's really interesting because I think they're also working on like Electron at Microsoft.
Oh.
So the stuff that they're doing with Windows is really good. We are definitely like looking at Windows and considering it when we like model our APIs. But it all just seems like very, very straightforward. I know they're also doing a lot of cool stuff with like the bundlers because currently React Native uses Metro Bundler and they've been doing a lot of stuff to make Webpack work with React Native.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which is really exciting as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, you also mentioned React Native Web as one of these kind of additional targets, like beyond just the Android and iOS targets that React Native focuses on. Now, I know that there's a lot of confusion about that project a whole, like from the naming and everything.
It's really just the name.
What is that for? Like, what does it do with regard to React Native and the web?
Right. So what React Native Web does, well, I guess like brief history lesson, React Native Web was created by Nicholas Gallagher, who made like normalized CSS and has just been around making awesome open source for a long time. And he made it when he was at Twitter to create the Twitter Lite PWA. And now if you go onto Twitter, if you open the inspector, like React Native Web is just used for the Twitter website, which is like the sixth biggest website in the world, probably more than that now. And yeah, it's just a very well baked out framework. What it has inside of it is it has like this really good style sheet API, which is one of the fastest CSS and JS libraries available. It's got this really incredible accessibility library built into it, which gives you the ability to just very quickly like toggle right to left and other things of that accessibility nature. And it really turns accessibility like into a building block rather than kind of this thing that you add on later. So like, for instance, if you want to make a link in React Native Web or just like React Native, what you would do on web is you would use like an anchor element. What you would do on React Native Web is you would use a text element, and then you would set the accessibility role to link. And when you do that, now it renders to an anchor element on web, and then on iOS and Android, screen readers know that it's a link. So it's kind of like universal accessibility. So they do a lot of very clever things with it. And it's just a really fun library to work with. But yeah, the name React Native for Web scares a lot of people off. I think just the word native is very scary, and putting it in a web framework it's like a recipe for making people not want to approach it. But it's a really great library, and there's a ton of people who are using, like Major League Soccer uses it, The Times, and now it's, if you make an Expo app, you get a React Native web app, which is kind of like wrapped, and then all the dev tools are taken care of for you, and it works very seamlessly.
Interesting. As someone who has primarily interacted with React DOM, which is probably the bulk of like the React umbrella ecosystem.
Yeah, it's basically what, when people say React, they mean like React DOM.
Totally. So like coming from that experience, what can people expect trying to use React Native Web for the first time? Like, what are some of those initial roadblocks that they might kind of find as they're like making a transition into this library?
Right. So if you create a new Expo project now, like Expo Init, you'll have like an app.js or an app.tsx. And in that file, you can really write whatever kind of React code you want. It just depends on like where you plan to run it. Like what's the target like browser or native. Mm-hmm. And so you could write React DOM code right into that. You could write like a P element, a div element, whatever you want. It just won't render natively. So you can import the primitives from React Native, like view and image and text, or any of the primitives provided by Expo, like camera or the gestures. And if you use any of those primitives, then they'll work across platform. So you can very slowly integrate it if you want, or you could switch right over to it. It's very like incremental in the way that it's implemented. And if you want a certain file to only work on web and not work on native, you could use a file like a platform extension. So you could have app.web.ts or app.web.tsx or whatever. And then the bundler will look for that more platform specific file name when it's building for a certain platform. So if you wanted to have like one module look one way and like a switch module or something, you could have switch.ts and then switch.web.ts. And one could be native, and the web one could be, you know, just the web code. And then none of that needs to be agnostic in that file. So you could go kind of incremental to whichever, size you want.
Interesting. So if I understand correctly, one of the things that changes in this kind of style of developing is typically you go with the maybe new native primitives, which are a little bit more generic than the web ones that we're used to in React DOM. But then from there, you actually, when you're creating custom components, use a different implementation for each of your platform extensions to like actually implement that component specifically for the platform you're trying to target.
Right. I think the main benefit of using something like that is that you can get really good tree shaking. So if there are a bunch of native dependencies you're implementing in one file and a bunch of web dependencies in another, then the bundler, it like that works the bundler level. So it knows how to remove all of the code from a platform that you're not using, which is actually how the Expo modules are implemented internally. So they have the universal API layer, and then there's like the native layers, and the bundler knows how to remove all of those native layers. So you don't have any like overhead when you're building for a different platform.
Interesting. Super fascinating. So I know that you mentioned in React Native Web, one of the best parts of that is the style sheet create function. So how does that how is that different from some of the other implementations that we've seen either for web or the default one in React Native?
Right. So the React Native style sheet and React Native Web is it's one of the fastest CSS and JS libraries around. There's actually a benchmark on React Native Web where you can test it against other CSS and JS libraries, which is super helpful. And it has a few shortcomings, I guess. And those are like, you can't really do pseudo classes up front. So you have to use hooks for all of those.
Okay.
And of course, you could implement those specifically for the platform. But if you want it to be universal, you could use something like, I have a library called React Native Web Hooks. And then you can implement like use hover. And then that's just like a Boolean. And then when the Boolean is on, you use a certain style. And when it's off, you use other styles. And you can do that for like hover and active and focus and everything except visited. Because apparently the visited has a security vulnerability. Because like you could load in a bunch of links onto a page with JS and then see if they've been visited or not without the user knowing. So like that's the only one.
Interesting. Things that you don't necessarily think about when you're just like kind of coming from CSS DOM land.
Right. If like ever since I noticed that every big website I go on now, they just don't have visited link styles, and it all makes sense to me now.
Now, I know that you had mentioned that this is kind of like React Native Web is the tool that's used to support the web in Expo,
right?
And supporting this vision of write once, run everywhere. Now, obviously, React Native Web is like an opinion of kind of how that mapping works out.
Yeah.
But there's always the possibility that, you know, something else might come up and kind of like usurp it, or maybe the React and React Native team are quietly working on some new thing that's gonna, you know, solve this problem for us. In the event that happens, you're using Expo, like what does that look like to maybe replace, you know, React Native Web with, you know, some unknown future thing? Is that a possibility, or are we kind of betting like pretty hard on React Native Web right now?
Yeah, I think React Native Web is the way to go. So before I actually worked on Expo Web, we the Expo team met with the React Native team, the React team. I think it was mostly the React Native team. And Nicholas Gallagher was there because he actually works at Facebook now.
Yeah.
And we just kind of discussed like the different options and approaches we could take, because even the React Native team wants web to be like a first class citizen. So it's just something that we've like, you know, spoken to them about. I don't think like if there was like a change of direction, we'd like probably communicate it with each other and something like that.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, and like I'm asking mostly because I know that sometimes, you know, there can be a lot of concern around,
yeah,
like changing your tool change, especially in something like this where it's like you're changing the way that you actually write components. And that can be like super scary. And a lot of times it's scariest because the future is unforeseen. And so I'm just kind of curious, like what kind of conversations, like you mentioned, have like gone into actually choosing that as the path forward to this, you know, write once, run everywhere type of future.
Yeah, well, so I think running web with React Native, there are like two really good options. One was React Native Web by Nick, and then the other was React Native DOM by Vincent Reamer, who's super awesome, lives in the Bay Area. He's actually also works at Facebook now. And so we were kind of going back and forth on those two choices, and I think we just kind of landed on React Native Web. It's a very proven technology, and it's very well baked out. Like,
yeah.
React Native DOM is very promising, and it has a lot of interesting implementations in it. But it like, there's just so much more to do with it, and so we kind of went with React Native Web. And even when we went with it like a year ago, there's still been so much to do to get it to like a place where it feels like you can just use it in co-op with React Native for mobile.
Yeah. So for people who are interested in this, are you working with, you know, the maintainers of React Native Web in order to kind of make this all work together in Expo?
Yeah. So like whenever there's an implementation of an Expo feature that kind of overlaps with the React Native proper feature, we'll like talk with Nicholas Gallagher about it. He does a lot of the maintenance himself, actually, which is
nice.
Really exciting. I noticed he was actually the first guest on your show, so it's awesome. I'm a huge fan of Nick Gallagher, by the way, so it's cool that I get to work
with him now.
Yeah, he's awesome. Currently there's a big movement called like Lean Core, where they're pulling a lot of modules out of React Native. And so they need to do that same thing with React Native Web. So there's kind of some back and forth there about like how those will be combined, because currently React Native and React Native Web are two separate packages. But with all the Expo packages and kind of some of these newer modules, we probably want to combine like the web and every platform into one module. So with the Expo modules, like Expo Camera, all of the web code and the native code lives in the same package. And then the Expo Webpack config, like our default Webpack config, knows how to tree shake out all of the like native or web code that you're not using. So there's a lot that goes into tooling, which is really the kind of the big thing that Expo CLI adds to the web workflow. Is before you need to like know a lot about Webpack config and Babel and tree shaking, and with this you don't need to know anything about them. You can just go and set it up and get started.
That's interesting, because it seems like you could maybe easily implement a naive version of all of this yourself and support the two platforms, but you might be sending, you know, the full implementation for everything to like every customer.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people were actually doing that for the longest time. So when I started on the project, there was like this really funny bug, which it's funny because I think no very good, like strict developer would run into this problem. But myself as a hobbyist kind of, I hit this problem a lot. And the problem is with React Native Web, if you imported a module which wasn't implemented on web, like tab bar iOS, then it would break all of tree shaking and you wouldn't know. Oh. It just like wouldn't be clear. And then it would import everything. And it's funny because, yeah, I think like no one who is very good would import a module that just doesn't work. And I'd be like, yeah, see if this works. And then it does. And then I had to like go through and debug like Webpack Bundle Analyzer, why my bundle is massive. So yeah, now tree shaking is a lot more resilient in React Native Web. That problem doesn't happen. If you import something which isn't implemented, it still tree shakes it out. And there's a ton of tree shaking that goes into making everything work. And we actually just, I just announced Preact support earlier this week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is really exciting because it cuts the default bundle size in half. So it's
amazing.
It's really exciting. Yeah, I'm a big like bundle size advocate fan person. I'm really big on keeping it minimal.
Nice. Now, I know that another concern that a lot of people have is, and when I say a lot of people, I mean myself included. Like anytime I see like cool tooling like this, like I want to know if it can work with, X framework that I'm already using, right? Like I use Next a lot. I'm like, I want to make sure that I can continue to use this while maybe getting the other benefits of all this really cool tooling that you're working on. How does it look to integrate Expo with other frameworks like Next or whatever else?
Yeah, so I think some big frameworks that people really wanted when I started talking about working on this project was like Gatsby, Storybook, Next.js, and I think just things like Jest. Really all the tools that people are very used to using. Style Components is another one. And I think just figuring out how to make all those work together is really important, because if you look at other cross-platform solutions outside of React Native, like Flutter, for instance, there's Flutter Web, but it doesn't support SSR, and it kind of is like its own thing. And the thing with the web is like,
yeah,
there's so many years of just like genius that's poured into like everything and all these incredible frameworks. And so we wanted to integrate, like that was a first class kind of need, is that it should integrate with all of your favorite tools right out of the box.
Yeah.
So you can integrate with Gatsby and Electron and Storybook. And we're still like working through Next. Actually, you can like start and build with Next. There's some features that I'm still working through. I'm planning on talking a lot more about that at my Reactathon talk next month or in March. And but all those other things, you can implement them in like one line of just command, like npx expo adapter, and then it will like install and use Gatsby. And now your web project is using Gatsby, and then the native project is being hosted in the standard native way. And if at any point like Next or Gatsby or Electron add more support for iOS and Android, then it should integrate very nicely with those as well.
That is awesome. That's super cool. Like, I'm excited to see this, because I know that there's been this vision for a really long time of, you know, even before React, right? Before React came out and before React Native was announced and viable, everyone wanted this future that was like write once, run everywhere. And React kind of was like, hey, this isn't actually tenable. Like, so we're going to kind of like flip it on its head. And it's like, I think they changed it to like learn once, write anywhere.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
it seems like
that.
we're kind of like maybe like getting closer to this, like the original idea, which was to just like write it and it runs on all of the platforms. How do you see that future, and how do you see Expo kind of playing the role of like actually being that bridge and getting us there?
Yeah, so I guess I see that future as like the web has changed a lot in the sense that there we see a lot more of these like web apps pop up, things like Spotify or Instagram, Twitter, but I think definitely like Netflix and Spotify are two great examples. Because they don't need to be like indexed, right? You just go in and you use the app. Navigation is kind of substandard for like what you would see in like a traditional website where you have like a static header and it scrolls all the way up and you have like a static footer.
Oh, sure.
So I think like we still want the ability to build stuff like that where you can have paradigms which make total sense on web and make little to no sense on native, which is why there's all these ways to kind of drop down and incrementally add features. But it would also be very nice to take some of these newer features, these like web app, PWA, native features, which kind of haven't really been decided too much in the web, and be like, well, why don't we just make those unified? So something like a camera, for instance, which can run in a lot of browsers, like why don't we just use this really great spec that native has figured out, or like permissions and notifications is a great one, because I think people found out you could have web notifications and they just slap them in the worst possible way. And
yeah.
I have never met a single person who has ever wanted web notifications turned on. But with native, you turn web notification or you turn notifications on with almost every app that you go into. And I think it's just because like they handle permissions very elegantly. They do it at the right time. So having better API, like native API design, stuff like that looks really nice and attractive across web and native. And things like that make perfect sense to share and write once. Then there's stuff like navigation, like I said, where navigation is currently just the trickiest topic in universal development because it's so different on web to native. Like native navigation, it's not even really called navigation on web. It's called like routing, right? It's called navigation on native because you've got like these navigators, you like the stack where it pushes screens and the tab and drawer. Some of those exist on web, but if you were to take like a stack navigator and put it in the browser, it looks really jarring, especially if you like navigate to like a deeply nested screen, because it doesn't like a native stack navigator has like all the screens like a card and you push the screens off of the stack. And like with web, if you told someone that you wanted to render all of the pages on top of each other and then just like move between it would be like crazy. So there's a lot of different like nuance to that that would be really interesting to explore. And I think areas like that are areas where we'll probably always have nuance, like when it's web, you want to do it like this. And when it's native, you want to do it like that. But there should still be really great libraries and definitions and guides. And I think Expo just defines a lot of the stuff with like React Navigation, which is a library that we maintain, or Expo, etc. Like all of the camera, the modules that Expo supports. I always default to camera, but I know I said it like 100 times. things like the video, for instance, a lot of the video paradigms make sense across web and native. In fact, we see a lot of cool native things show up on web when it comes to videos and maps and things of that nature. So I do think that there's just so many little things that you can do in the browser, and a lot of those things overlap with native. And Expo is just going to try and maximize getting all of that stuff unified and all around just be the easiest way to make an app. However you want to make the app, it's just going to be the easiest way to start an app, build it, and then deploy it to wherever you want it deployed.
Well, I really like what you said there about how the web has a lot of genius behind it. There's some amazing things that we have figured out like as a web platform. But at the same time, there's, you know, an equal amount of genius, you know, coming from native, and that there are a lot of interactions and a lot of things that have been figured out on that side that we haven't actually necessarily gotten to yet. So like, you know, camera integration, as you mentioned, you know, video notifications.
Yeah, or like gestures is a big one.
Yeah, all of these things have been figured out on mobile and don't really have solutions. And so when you use these Expo libraries, you actually get to buy into some of those patterns and practices that we don't have great solutions, if any solutions, for yet.
Right. And vice versa. It would be great to see things like maybe different parts of like SSR work with native, and areas where you like can do indexing, and even just like the dev tooling on web is the biggest thing that we take over to native. Like things like the config file is a great example. Like with Expo, you have this app.json config file, and that simplifies the iOS info.plist, so like a plist file, and then on Android, the Android, like the manifest.xml in an XML file. Huh. So simplifying that, we made app.json, and it's like, oh, that's so much better. You're using a JSON instead of a plist and an XML file. But then it's like, after you use it for a while, you start to look at web and you're like, well, you can add comments to the config file. You can have plugins, and they use like a JS config file. And like if so, we're working on like app.config.js now, and just taking like all of the really great, even just dev tooling, not even like the standards on the web, and just bringing that dev tooling to native is making native development just feel so much better and just really fun to use.
That's awesome. Now, if someone wanted to get started small and just take one of their components, like let's say something simple, doesn't even have like a lot of interaction around it, something like an avatar, like a very small little thing, they wanted to use Expo for that and kind of just export this one tiny little component and then use it on all of their platforms. Is that possible? And like what's the path forward that you would recommend for that person?
So I think like right now there's still some thought to be done around making it like perfect. It's pretty good right now, but I think like what the perfect implementation would look like is you can install React Native and then get like maybe just the view or just the style sheet part, because obviously if you have two or more, now they're reusing stuff. Currently, if you download React Native Web and you don't use any of it, it'll tree shake out all of it. If you use one part of it, it'll tree shake out most of it, right? So if you were to, for instance, yarn add Expo camera and download that, it will expect React Native Web and React DOM to be there, right? And if you use it, then it's just using Vue and Style Sheet. So then it will remove everything. It will remove like text and image and all the other stuff that you're not using from React Native Web. So then you have this universal camera element, which then you can just use in web and you don't need to use anywhere else. I think like we'll see this work a lot better with things like React Native Gesture Handler, which I've been working on, because you'll be able to just install it as a gesture library. In fact, actually, a great example of this is React Spring, because React Spring, I don't know if you're familiar with that package.
Yeah.
It's like a super popular web library, and it actually uses React Native Animated, like, because that's just a JS animated library. It's like in React Spring when you download it.
Yeah.
And people are fine with that. It works very well. So React Native Web it's kind of like that. Like you can just install these JS modules, and if the native dependency isn't there and you're not running it on native, then there's no problem.
Interesting. So we're already like, you know, if you're using React Spring, you're already part of this kind of convergence of platforms then.
Yeah, kind of. I think like they just like fork the animated part out. It doesn't actually have a dependency, like a proper dependency.
Sure.
But it could in theory. I mean, it could.
Awesome. So there were a couple questions that came in on Twitter, kind of asking about what it would look like, you know, so you have this like kind of like Twitter Lite style, like site that you're building with like React Native Web. And so you have that in like mobile, but like, how do you actually like expand that out to like take advantage of some, you know, more desktop class type of views?
Yeah, this is a question that we get a lot, because I think like with Expo right now, a lot of people have native Expo apps, and you can just run like, you can hit the W key with Expo start, and then it just runs it in the web. And immediately it's like, wow, this works in the web. But then you notice like, it's this kind of small, compact app. Unless you made it work for iPad, it's going to be just a small app that's like dragged out and very long.
Sure.
And it's actually easier than what it might seem to like make that into something that looks really nice on web. The first thing is the pseudo classes, right? Like hover and focus effects. Those are mostly just hover effects and active effects. These are things that we just see on web and we almost take it for granted. So there's that library that I made, React Native Webhooks, which just lets you add hover effects and stuff of that nature universally. Then media queries is another really important thing to have on web, which we usually don't focus on too much on native. Usually what you would do is just look at the kind of width of maybe an element, and you just work on it in the size of that element. So if it's a card, you're like, the card gets to be only this big. You don't really look at like the whole screen size very often on native.
Sure.
But on web, that's a lot more common. So what we did there is actually really interesting. So I created this library, expo/matchmedia. And what that does is you import that, it's a side effect, and it polyfills out native so you can use a web library on native. So you can use React Responsive, which is a really popular JS React Media Query library. And we actually kind of went the other way, and we made native work more like web. So you can implement universal media queries using this package React Responsive, and it's awesome. So I would recommend media queries and pseudo classes, and then just like making sure that your navigation looks and feels right, which is, it's got so much nuance to it right now. That's like the one thing I'm working on. Very like as soon as we're done with this call, I'm going right back to navigation work.
Awesome. Now, I think we have like kind of like one last kind of branch of questioning that people asked on Twitter, and this is about testing. I know that it can be difficult enough to just test a component or a tree of components, you know, given the tooling that's already there. What does that look like when you're testing across, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 platforms?
Yeah. Testing was a weird one when I started with this project. And what I found was, so React Native, actually, it has a Jest preset built into it, the React Native Jest preset, very aptly named. And when you run that to make a, like unit tests, Jest unit tests, it's going to mock out the platform as iOS. So that means it will take the library platform from React Native and it will make it act as if it was running on iOS. So if you did platform.os, it will equal iOS. And when we talked about earlier, those platform extensions, like if there was a file app.ios.tsx, that would get used in the unit test when it's resolving things. So even in React Native, I found it wasn't testing your Android code. It was just testing how it works on iOS. So this was a big problem because I was pushing code, like tons of new modules, and then people would like make an update on iOS and it would break web because there's so many differences. And so I had to like really rethink this. And so I worked on this thing, it's called Jest Expo, but it's just, it's a universal testing with Jest. And what it does is it mocks out the platform 4 different times. So one for iOS, Android, web, and then Node, so you can test your SSR modules. So it uses something called a Jest multi-runner. And with that Jest multi-runner, it will mock it out differently for each platform. And then you can press something like the X key and then enable or disable like iOS, Android, like whatever you want to work on, which is it's really nice. And then for the tests, it actually does like the inverse of that, where you can have a test, which is called like test or like app-test. .web.tsx, and then that will only run with the web resolution. It won't run on iOS or Android.
Interesting.
Yeah, so right into even like the test integration, there is platform resolution, like universal stuff built through it. Because something we found was like with React Native Web, it was very well thought out for sharing things like view and image and text. But what about like when you want to share your Babel or your Webpack config or your Jest config? Yeah. These things are like not very clear like how you're going to implement them, because you usually have like one file called like the babel.config and the root file of your project. And so it's hard to switch. But so we kind of needed to think through all of these, and Jest was a big one. And so then kind of pushed it further than there. We made a library called Jest Expo Enzyme, which lets you run like universal enzyme. So it'll mock it out for native or web if you're running on web. And Enzyme lets you do like the tree testing, like render testing. And then there's another library that I made called Jest Expo Puppeteer, which as the name implies, it lets you run Puppeteer right out of the box with an Expo web project. So you can do like headless end-to-end testing in a Chromium browser just without having to do anything. I'm a very, I don't know if paranoid developer is the right way to put it, but I love my tests. I like to make sure everything's tested.
Well, I feel like once you've worked with a comprehensive test suite and it's caught things that you would not have thought about coming back to a project, it's like, it feels invaluable. You feel like, so like you're like on a high wire without a net, like when you don't have one.
Yeah. I think people feel this on a much broader term when they use like TypeScript and it catches like some, and they're just like, I'm never going to not use you again. That's how it feels with tests sometimes. I'm just like, I need these for everything.
Totally. Well, thank you so much for your time. We're like right at the end of our time, and you've given us such a wealth of information about what you're working on. I am so excited for your talk in March. That's going to be at Reactathon, and I'm hoping to be there, and it's going to be awesome. If people want to learn more about Expo, what you're doing in React Native and all of those related projects, how do they get connected? And then also, how do they find you?
So if you want to follow Expo, you can follow us on Twitter at Expo. It's a good Twitter handle. It's just EXPO. And then if you want to follow me, I'm at BaconBricks, B-R-I-X, or I'm online at evanbacon.dev or baconbricks.com. Those are all Expo web websites. So you'll be using Expo there as well. And yeah, I'm just generally on GitHub all the time. So if you open an issue on any repo, I'll probably respond to it.
Awesome. Well, Evan, it has been a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for telling us, you know, what we can look forward to in the future.
Yeah, it's been great talking with you today. Thanks so much.
For links and show notes, visit reactpodcast.com/81. If you like this show, there's a fast, free way to demonstrate your support. Leave us a review on iTunes. It's the best way for you to let me know what you think we're doing right and what we can improve. 2 to 3 minutes of your time helps us make the best show we possibly can. As always, links and show notes for all episodes are available at reactpodcast.com. This episode was edited by Mikhail Delport. It was produced by Mikhail Delport and Sarah Jackson at Spec, a network to help you level up in design and development. Check out spec.fm for other shows that are sure to fast-track your career. I'm your friend Chantastic. Thanks for listening. We'll be in your ears again next week.